Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PAXTSINC. PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, how to become a member of the organization, how you can donate, the codes of conduct that they've created for Black America, and get more involved, period, with the things the organization have going on, literacy programs, sports programs, surveys. Also, if you help them out, so with that learning center, a whole bunch of resources, bam, going to hit you right in your face that you can utilize from audio resources, political resources, books you could probably read or listen to, survival information, legal cases, all those things. And it's also a store with, you know, items and things that you can buy to support the organization. Once again, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com, where we got the livest, hypest, fattest, using 90 slang, hypest, illest podcast you've ever heard in your life. Of course, you know, this podcast, yours truly, the Freedom Train podcast series, as well as Lessons from the Screen, the Fix Sports Podcast, Shelby's World, and the Enigma Sept Hour. So once again, www.freedomtrainradio.com. And all of the podcasts that are available on the Freedom Train Network are available on your favorite podcasting listening platform, from iHeartRadio to iTunes to Google Play to Stitcher to Spotify. Whatever you listen on, just go ahead and search Freedom Train Network or any other podcast that we have. And once again, our website, one more time, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Patrick.
What up?
What it look like?
Look like rain.
Hey, man, tell them about our Black Movie Playoffs, man.
Oh, yeah. Check me out now. It's the Funk Show, brothers. So we got the Black Movie Playoffs coming up here. We took 200 movies, 200 black movies, not all of them, so that, you know, you got to go and check to see which movies made the list and which movies didn't, if we released the list, because we ain't put it out yet. I got them.
We took 200
movies. And we going to boil that down to the greatest black movie of all times. And it's not debatable. It's not nothing you can say about it. No controversy. Once we make our decision, that's what it's going to be. And you can hate or you can love it. It don't matter. So, but what we going to do is we already broke that 200 down to 64. And so now we got 64 movie playoff bracket made.
Pew, pew, pew. All
right, yeah. And so what we did is on one side, we got the brothers' flick picks. That's yep. The boys, the dudes, Joseph Ward, yours truly, Joseph A.
Yep.
Ward, right
shout
here on
out.
The
Freedom
Train. And Professor right. Carlton Jones from Off the Sides with Professor Carlton Jones.
215.
And the creator of the Independence Day Project. They're on one side. And on the other side, we got Shelby from Shelby's World, and we got Motor Oracle from the Tea Time Show from back in the day.
Oh, no.
And they representing the Black Lady Cinema. And so the ladies picked day 32, the men picked
right.
day 32 out of the 200
right.
that we selected. And now they're going to be going head to head. So what's going to happen is the ladies is going to get all the way down to they pick their number one movie, and then the men going to get all the way down to they pick their number one movie, and then, bang!
In your face.
Explosion. And we're going to figure wow. out which movie is the greatest movie of all time based on
right.
the champions in the women's category and the champions in the men's category. Super exciting. Super, you know you want to hear it. Go ahead and get ready for it. And if you go to the Freedom Train website, I ain't going to say the information is going to be up there because I don't know if it will be or not. But if you go to the Freedom Train Facebook page, you can already see the clips from some of the discussions being had as we whittled down to 264. So we're going to be dropping that, and those will be coming at you. And we're going to get the website updated here. So you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it. By the time this show come out on Wednesday,
The website will be updated.
The website will be updated, and you'll be able to, at the very least, see the full 64-team bracket, movie bracket.
So go to the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. All right, so our social media, Instagram, at Freedom Train Network. Facebook, Freedom Train Network. Those are the only two places that's up there. Oh, yeah, YouTube, Freedom Train Network. Those are the three social media sites that our information is on. So that way you can see where we at and what we have posted so far about our black movie cinema playoffs. And it's really going down in the motherfucking side.
And one other thing, that picture is huge, the playoff pick, the bracket. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to click on it so that you can zoom all the way in. You can't just zoom all the way in without clicking on it first, because it's going to get blurry when you try to zoom in. That's why right over top of the picture, it's going to say click to zoom. So if you're on a computer or a laptop, you got to move a little mouse, click on it. If you're on your phone, just press the fucking picture, and then you'll be able to zoom all the way in and be able to see everything.
That's what I told my girlfriend, click to zoom. Hey, man, so today, we got two main topics, but some subtopics within one of the topics. So we're going to talk about the latest in the 2020 Democratic presidential race, which your boy, some of y'all homeboy Bernie Sanders dropping out the race. So we're going to talk about that, give our opinion on that. Then we're going to take different angles from the coronavirus. That's not necessarily the biggest stories to be talked about, or the number one topics to be talked about surrounding coronavirus. So we want to talk about, you know, give a general update of where we are on coronavirus. Also talk about the homeless rate and how coronavirus is affecting the homeless. The homeless, how coronavirus is affecting the victims of domestic violence when it comes to coronavirus. I know this one of the things I heard early in the outbreak is how social distancing and staying at home is going to affect a lot of people who are victims of coronavirus. Also, we're going to look at the death rates of black people, but black and brown people as well, but more particularly black people when it comes to coronavirus. So that's where we start. That's where our podcast is flowing today. You know what I'm talking about? So let's go ahead and get started with Patrick Uncle Bernie Sanders. So, like we've been telling y'all, Bernie Sanders wasn't going to be the Democratic nominee. We've been telling y'all that. And so, did the young people vote for him this time, Pat? Or they stand him up again?
I mean, I haven't, I'm going to be clear, I haven't really dug through the numbers like I would like to have just yet. But it looked like, from what I was looking at, it looks like he got stood up again by the young people. And Bernie Sanders would like to tell people that this is an ideological war that he's waging, and it's not so much about winning the presidency as it is about moving the Democratic Party more to the left. That's all bullshit. That's bullshit.
Well, let's break that down real quick. Okay, let's break that down, because when you talk about moving the Democratic Party to the left to do what? And where is this left that he's moving?
Well, he's trying to say that the party needs to become more liberal, more progressive, as if they're the same thing. But he's trying to say that the party needs to take more of an interest in spreading the wealth. Now, mind you, Bernie Sanders has shifted a little bit himself since becoming a millionaire. If you remember in 2016, his stance was very hardcore anti-millionaire, and he very much banked on the fact that he was one of the only candidates that was running that was not a millionaire. Well, since then, he wrote a book, and he became a millionaire. And so you notice you don't hear a lot of that same rhetoric about being the only person on the stage that's not a millionaire and blah, 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 but His main thing was the Democratic Party needs to look at things like free health care for all. They need to look at things like free college tuition. They need to look at things like all of the things that sound good on paper. But you know, the two biggest issues I have there is, one, you still got to figure out how to pay for it. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I am saying you got to figure out how to pay for it. And two, the president doesn't have the authority to do any of that shit. All right? Let's stop it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't have any faith. You know, for one, I'm looking at it from a black standpoint. I just say this right here, right now. When it comes to this presidential race, a sacrifice has to be made. So as a black person, a responsible voting black person, I will sacrifice Donald Trump being president again so the Democratic Party won't fuck us over. I will. I think smart black voters should do that. We should sacrifice the Democratic Party for our own sake, like they do us all the time. And if that means 4 more years of Trump, that means 4 more years of Trump. Now, I believe if Bernie Sanders would have been the Democratic nominee, he would have got blew out. That would have been like when the Lakers matched up with the 76ers in the 2001 NBA Finals, when you got Allen Iverson and company versus Kobe and Shaq and the Lakers. And, yeah, they got that one game. They won that one game, but they got their toe up for the rest of the series. Or like with that Super Bowl matchup, we just get blew out. Because Bernie Sanders is, we've said on the show this a lot. We think Bernie Sanders is full of shit.
Yeah, I do.
Like, straight full of shit. Especially when it comes to black people, because he spends a lot of time of his campaign focusing on black people. But nobody can tell us what Bernie Sanders has actually done for black people as a politician. And the only thing you have to tell me about Bernie Sanders, once again, is that he marched with Dr. King, is, and I'm going to tell you, get the fuck out of my face, there's a lot of sellouts that don't march with Dr. King.
Right, and the fact of the matter is, that, like, I feel like there's a reason why Trump wanted to run against Bernie Sanders. And there's a reason why Republicans in open states were choosing to go into Democratic Party primaries and vote for Bernie Sanders. Like, there's a reason why. Bernie Sanders, and this is one of the things about politics, you could love it or hate it, but it is what it is. Bernie Sanders has been a politician for 30 years. He didn't try to become a Democrat until he realized that he wanted to be president and he couldn't do it as an independent. So then he tried to join the Democratic Party, but he didn't make any inroads. He didn't make any friends with the Democratic establishment, which is why in 2016 they chose to back Hillary Clinton, and it's also why here in 2020 they've chosen to back Joe Biden. And the fact of the matter is, most Democrats feel the same way. Who is Bernie Sanders? If he's been, let me be real about this. If Bernie Sanders had been a champion for black people for the last 30 years, black people would have fucking known who he was prior to 2016.
Right.
Let's be real about that. Like, all of a sudden in 2016, these pictures of him marching with Martin Luther King come out from fucking 30 years ago. All of a sudden. Like, why hasn't that shit been out?
Well, that should have been black America's first side out of him. First of all, why is this your campaign? Why aren't you telling us what you've done for us as a politician in these last 30 years versus bringing up something your ass did that's probably a high teenager, a high 20-year-old with nothing to lose? But as a politician, because nobody made you choose Vermont as the state. So people are like, well, he was in Vermont. Well, who made him choose Vermont? Well, hell, last time I checked, Dr. King wasn't marching in Vermont. So, you know, he chose Vermont. So why did he choose that particular state? If he wanted to make such more of an impact for black people, he could have chosen a state we could actually make an impact for black people.
And the other issue is the lives of black people in Vermont have not improved with him as a senator there. Like, so that's also something you got to look at. Now, I know politics is bigger than just what one senator can do, but in his own state, where he's one of the most powerful people, he hasn't had a positive impact on the black people in his own state. And his, admittedly, now you got to accept that his state is one of the whitest states in the nation. I think it's the second whitest state in the nation. But it's real easy to talk about equality for all when you're in a state that's largely homogenous. You know, it's real easy because you ain't got, there ain't no backlash to face. And you see with his all-white constituency, a damn near all-white constituency, you see he ain't really want to touch my mind just went blank. The conversation on reparations.
Yeah, he kept skirting around that.
That all-white constituency would side out the fuck out of him.
Nah, dog. Don't try to do that shit, dog. We asked you a specific question about reparations. Answer this shit. Joe Led.
Yeah. So, but the bigger issue for me, though, is the president really has the chief responsibility. One of the chief responsibilities of the president is foreign affairs. He's a chief foreign diplomat. Is Bernie Sanders well known for his affinity for foreign affairs? Does he have a lot of foreign interest or a lot of foreign connections that we know of?
Nah.
Like, I honestly think for all of his talk about making America better, bro, you're in Congress. That's the best place to do that. What have you been doing the last 30 years? Why have you made no friends?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Nah, but that's real, though. That's real. We got to ask, though. That's why we had a conversation we have on this podcast, because we ask questions that we hope other people are asking, but we know a lot of people ain't really asking. I mean, right? Why haven't, as a senator, why haven't lives of black people improved under you? Now, trust me, now, those who may be listening for the first time to hear this, we are by no means championing Joe Biden.
Oh, no.
So let's just say this. Fuck Biden, fuck Bernie, fuck Bloomberg, fuck Trump, and all them other folk who don't give a shit and ain't doing shit for us. Fuck all of them. Like, for me, Joseph Ward, this presidential race is a wash. I'm writing my name in. It's a wash. I already know I'm writing my name in because I don't care about none of these motherfuckers because I know none of them ain't going to do nothing for us. But if we're being real about this Bernie Sanders thing, because so many, and we're going to get on Biden in a minute, but so many people put their faith in Bernie as if Bernie is changing things for the Democratic Party, like you said earlier. But, man, the Democratic Party ain't doing nothing but learning how to do better at keeping that hood zone. Like, that's one thing you can respect about Trump. At least they the crackers who Trump now, they took their hoods off, so we know who they are. Bernie Sanders now still sitting there trying to act like they your friend while making sure they do nothing for you, but they want your vote. So the question is, well, what are you going to do for me for my vote?
And that's where I put the onus back on black people. Like we talked about, every time we talk about politics, as a collective, you have to present a list of things that are mandatory in order for a politician to get your vote. And we haven't done that because we still stuck on this trickle-down economics, a rising tide lifts all boats bullshit. That shit don't work when your fucking boat is goddamn anchored or moored to the fucking ground. The rising tide is going to drown your ass.
Well, what if I don't have no boats?
Happening?
What if I don't have no boats because you motherfuckers destroyed all our boats?
Well, then you in the same boat as everybody else. You ain't the motherfuckers who boats is anchored to the seafloor. When the water rise, you die. Your shit is, you going to drown. And that's what's happening to black people. The wealthier America gets, the more black people realize that as a collective, we don't have access to a large percentage of it, and we're not doing as great as our mothers, fathers, and grandparents were. And a lot of that, I'm sure, you know, people want to boil that down to the recession, this, that, and the third. Millennials across the board and subsequent generations are going to have a hard time. But the fact of the matter is, even before that happened, things were still looking bleak financially for black people in America. So,
yeah.
A Bernie Sanders presidency was not going to change that, because the president doesn't have the authority to do the things that Bernie was claiming. Now, he could use his bully pulpit to champion things and to really talk sternly to people, but at the end of the day, domestic policy is made by Congress. And not only that, but Bernie Sanders never really promised anything that I was able to find in any meaningful way that would have any meaningful effect on black people to black people. So, and this was the issue we were having in 2016 when everybody was like, Bernie this, Bernie that. And I was like, I don't hate Bernie Sanders. I honestly think he probably would make a better president than Joe Biden if we're just looking purely at domestic affairs. But he ain't going to do shit that's going to change shit for black people. That's the way I view it.
Right. And see, well, that's where I'm coming from. When you're asking us for our votes, what are you going to do for us? For Joe Biden, too. Because, you know, a lot of black people are voting for Joe Biden stupidly because Joe Biden was only...
he was Barack's vice president.
Yeah. Stupidly. Or because they'd be like, well, he got a better chance of beating Trump. And so, you know, having this conversation with just one black person, and it's finally come down to, like, is our whole voting just really boiled down to getting Trump out of office? Why is that black America's biggest concern? How has Trump been a burden to black America?
No, I mean, I think Trump himself has empowered a certain segment of white society, but I think what black people get because the black community is a lot more aware than everybody gives them credit for. But what I think is often overlooked is the fact that that element was already there. Like, that element was in place. Now they in your face. They done took their hoods off. But they were still affecting your lives negatively with the fucking hoods on. Now they just cussing you out while they do it.
But if we talking about politics, like real politics, Trump hasn't really looked at things that to like single-handedly focus on dismantling black America. He's been fucking shit up for America, period, across the board. But not black America.
Yeah.
So we're looking at things like that. We got to get Trump out. Because for a lot of people, for a lot of people, it's emotional about them with Trump. They hate him. They have such vitriol with him because it's stupid. And I get it. But why are you that emotionally invested in this man and all these things here? But you're not that emotionally invested in voting smart or voting the best way for our community.
Yeah, and that's where we got to have a civics class, because Trump does not have that dramatic of an effect on your daily life in terms of policy. That goes to your city, city commissioner, your city officials and administrators, and your county officials and administrators, and even on the state level. Those administrators have more control over, more of an impact on your day-to-day life than Donald Trump does. So, like, Donald Trump being an idiot can be totally negated by you having competent local politicians and by you voting in competent people into the Congress that are going to have a fucking spine, have a fucking backbone, and is going to stand up to stupid people. If America did that, Trump would be a non-motherfucking
issue. Vote away. It just ain't just giving their vote away.
So, I agree with you from the standpoint of, I think it's a bad idea to vote for presidency solely on the purpose of getting Trump out for some emotional reason, especially if you're then going to turn around and ignore local politics or ignore your local Senate race or ignore your local House of Representatives race. You know, the House can be totally remade every 2 years. Every fucking 2 years. A branch of Congress can be totally remade. Like all of them motherfuckers can be fired in 2 years. And every 2 years, a third of the Senate can be remade. So you can totally reshape Congress every 2 years. But instead of doing that, we let these motherfuckers in Congress stay in place for 30, 40 years, and we beat ourselves up over the president who does not make domestic policy.
Well,
this shit is mind-boggling.
Like, yeah, well, we talk about it all the time. We focus on the theatrics. We always focusing on that. Like I was looking at something, and that was talking about how people are distracted. So, you know, as a person who likes sports, I'm not going to say act like sports is the best thing or sports is ultra healthy or things like that. But I hear a lot of conscious people a lot of times try to use sports as number one thing that is used to distract black people and entertain black people. But politics itself is one of the things that's used to distract and entertain
mm-hmm.
black people.
Politics is...
Like we're... They use politics to distract you from politics. Think about that.
Nah, it's real.
Like, people not even voting smart. People don't even know how to vote because they're caught up in the dramatics and the theatrics. Like, if you take the emotion out of Donald Trump, out of you not liking Donald Trump, take the emotion out and just went about this, like, is it really going, like, for the sake of black America, making some kind of sacrifice. Are we going to sacrifice ourselves again for the Democratic Party, or are we going to sacrifice the Democratic Party for ourselves? Most people are okay with us sacrificing ourselves for the Democratic Party, even though the Democratic Party ain't never done shit for us.
Well, I think Trump does place us in a different, interesting situation because you're right. Trump is fucking shit up for everybody. Like, if you ain't a rich white dude, Trump is fucking your shit up.
Right.
And so even if we do take the emotion out of it, we still have to face the fact that you're dealing with a president that is going to continue to fuck shit up. And the solution can't just be getting another person in there that won't fuck shit up for everybody, but won't necessarily fix things for your people. And that's why I keep going back to Congress, local officials. Like, do you neutralize a stupid president by having a strong Congress and a strong judicial system? Well, this stupid president has been allowed to compromise Congress and shape the judicial system in his image. So, the only real recourse we have in order to get things back is to focus on Congress. So that's kind of where that's why I keep saying, like, Congress. Like, this election, every single member of the House of Representatives is going to be up for election. Do you know who is running in your district? Do you know who's running in your state? You know, local officials are up for election. Like Joe Biden ain't going to fix shit for black people. Bernie Sanders ain't going to fix shit for black. And I know it's easy to just focus on Trump. It's real easy to fucking do that.
Right, because he's a hot button. But if we're being real about it, like you said, these motherfuckers that you all are putting your faith in ain't going to do nothing for black people because they never have and they never will.
Right. And honestly, and I know this is going to be controversial for a lot of people, but I'm going to say it any fucking way. Honestly, the argument can be made that Joe Biden did more for black people as Barack Obama's vice president than Bernie Sanders did for black people in the 30 years he's been a senator. That argument could legitimately be made. Because Joe Biden, as he has stated with some accuracy to it, there were some false claims. But there is a lot of accuracy to the fact that he had a direct hand in stopping frisk. There is some legitimacy to the claims of some of the things he did as far as race is related in America while Barack Obama was presidency. Now, did any of that have an appreciable or a meaningful impact on the day-to-day lives of black people as a collective in the country? No. But then you go back to, okay, well, but what has Bernie Sanders done, period, that had any effect on black people anywhere? even regionally. So, but, you know, this whole Bernie Sanders madness, like, and it's funny, too, because, so you got the people who are just going to vote for whoever they think is going to get rid of Trump. And I don't fault you people. I understand why you feel that way. Whatever. It's fine. My only thing is, well, I know Joe faults you. My only thing is, no local, vote locally and vote intelligent locally and with regards to the National Congress, the Federal Congress, other federal governmental positions. But, so I don't fault you for wanting to get Trump out, but be intelligent about your vote in other places. And for those people who are so stuck on Bernie Sanders that they would just be willing to just throw the election in order for, you know, to make another point to the Democratic Party, you need to reevaluate a lot with your priorities, in my opinion. Because, one, the Democratic Party, I already showed you, they don't give a damn about how you think. They did that when they basically sided with Joe Biden over Bernie Sanders. Again, y'all were supposedly teaching them a lesson in 2016. They did not learn it because they don't give a fuck. The sooner you accept that, the sooner you could be and get find your happy place. But the other thing is, you're basing your entire political opinion on the fact that your candidate didn't win, without even really considering the fact that that's where you're getting all these conspiracy theories. The Democratic Party is trying to cheat Bernie Sanders, and I don't know nobody that voted for Joe Biden, and where are all of these people, and blah, blah, blah. No, stop it.
But, I mean, if the Democratic Party really felt like Bernie Sanders was the best candidate, then, you know, they would be behind him. So,
right, there is no grand conspiracy to destroy Bernie Sanders. People don't like him.
If voters felt like he was the best, people would be voting for him.
And again, this is Bernie Sanders' fault too. Every time we talk about this, got to bring it up. Bernie Sanders, the decisions you're making are not very wise. To be as old as you are constantly campaigning to people that do not vote.
Right.
Young people don't vote. The moment you can vote through social media, you'll be on to something. But as long as these little motherfuckers got to get up and go somewhere to cast a ballot.
Man, they be talking. They be talking, baby.
So your support is not even as big as you really think it is. Because if those people really supported you, they would have went and voted.
Right.
And then at the behavior of the Bernie bots and the Bernie bros. These are people who... They're basically like Democratic Trump supporters. They treat Bernie Sanders the same way Trump supporters treat Donald Trump. That shit is scary.
Yeah. we could talk about that all day, but we're gonna move on so we can get into this coronavirus.
Corona, but, that Rona. You got that.
Y'all see how we feel about Bernie now. But all right, so let's get y'all an update on some numbers and things real quick before we get into the discussion about coronavirus. So
Rona.
The Worldometer. Worldwide, there are 1,924,635 cases. There are 119,686 deaths and 444,836 recovered cases. That's worldwide, 1.9 million worldwide. So let me see. Countries. So the U.S. has shot up exponentially in numbers over the last 2-3 weeks, from like 100,000 like 2 weeks ago to like 500,000 now. Of course, testing has a lot to do with that, because a lot more people are being tested. So since a lot more people are being tested, numbers are supposed to rise with testing. So it's 586,941 cases in the U.S., 23,640 total deaths, 36,948 total recovered, and 526,353 active cases, 12,772 of those are serious cases. So total tests in the United States, 2,943,955 in the U.S. So those are numbers. Now, I do believe all the information, all the numbers aren't being put out. I do believe that.
From my little observations and my little research, I do believe that. But those are world numbers and USA numbers for the coronavirus. So one of the first things we want to talk about with this is the impact that coronavirus is having on Black America. At one point, the conversation was around or surrounding Black people may not even be having black people may not be able to get the virus. Well, we know that ain't true no more, especially after Rudy Gobert got it. You know what I'm saying? But then we now have numbers, and we can see that Black people are, especially in the United States, Black people are having the highest disparities. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Black people are having the highest disparities with coronavirus, correct?
Yeah, there's one population, the Native American population, I believe, is percentage-wise being hit harder than Black people. But definitely Black and Hispanic people are being hit really, really hard.
Right. So that's a huge turn from early in, well, from when coronavirus first spread in March, and us being unsure that if Black people can catch it, but knowing that it's a virus and knowing Black people can catch viruses, but a lot of people saying this, saying that with conjecture, not knowing a lot about the virus as we learn more about the virus, as we study the virus, you know, it's a zoonotic virus, which meaning it originated in an animal, and it can go from species to species, meaning that's what it being zoonotic. And unless you find other information to say it ain't zoonotic, right now we know it's zoonotic, right? And so Black people. So Pat, just off top, what's some of the information you've come across to kind of support the information on why Black people are being hit hard with this coronavirus?
Well, I mean, it's when you look at the impacts of what makes it dangerous, you're really looking at people with a certain type of pre-existing condition, situations that restrict or inhibit your ability to process airflow already. When you get an upper respiratory infection, especially a severe one like coronavirus, or I'm sorry, like COVID-19, SARS number 2, whatever you want to call it, that's going to create a compound issue for you where you already had something that created breathing problems for you, and now you have a severe upper respiratory infection. So things like asthma, high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, all of those things that you know are very, very, very prevalent in the Black community, those things are all things that can really fuck you up if you get the coronavirus. So, you know, and then that is one of the things that we didn't talk about it on the show, but I believe it was being discussed. Well, I know it was being discussed by me, but I believe it was being discussed by other groups early on. I'm talking about back in late January, early February, as we were really watching this thing come into the United States. And I know, like, and I don't have no shame about saying it, and yes, we will toot our horns. We first did our show about this in January, but we were actually talking about it prior to then because I had seen a little blurb or whatever And in late December that had me thinking about it, just because at the time it was spreading and the way it was being discussed, it made me suspicious. So not suspicious, because I didn't think it would be what it ended up being, but I was concerned that it could be. I'll say that. I didn't think it would be, but I was concerned that it could be. And it ended up being what I was concerned that it could be. But even in those early stages, it was easy to predict that if this thing and the reason I'm saying this is because I know a lot of people are saying there's no way we could have predicted this. And I'm saying,
predicted this to the T.
It was easy to predict this. If you paid attention to what was going on, and you paid attention to what's happening in the black community, any sort of upper respiratory infection that is as serious as COVID was, we're talking about it was killing healthy people in China.
Yeah.
If you bring in an input and let that thing gain a foothold in a community that's plagued by things that affect our ability to breathe and transport oxygen, of course it's going to have devastating damage. Of course it's going to be catastrophic. So I really don't even understand what the argument here is. I do know that people feel some type of way about people talking about black people being affected without addressing some of the systemic reasons as to why we have these conditions, being placed in food deserts, being placed in situations where we don't have access to the cleanest air, or we're exposed to dangerous chemicals.
Well, let's just be real from that, because all those are factors. But there are a lot of black people who do have resources who choose taste over health.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're right. We got to take if we want to be fair about what's going on as a community, we've got to take a holistic view of everything that's going on. So that means that we do have to look at our dietary decisions. You know, we do have to look at our activity levels. We have to look at all of those things. We do. And you're right. We also definitely need to, I feel like we definitely need to acknowledge systemic racism's hand in it. Where I come from is the perspective of, okay, we've been knowing about these systemic issues for a while now.
Right. What are we doing?
Yeah, let's do something, right? Like, let's do, what are we doing? Like, come on, let's do something. There are a lot of people out there that have all of the information and all of the intelligence possible to begin to put things together. They don't necessarily have the resources, but they have the intellectual know-how and the resources intellectually to put things together. There are plans after plans. PAX has plans. Plans are everywhere. Let's put resources to one and do something about it. Like, how do we prevent this from happening again?
Well, yeah, because it's like I'm looking at this. I'm looking at something on BBC.com. So it's talking about going on here in America. And according to BBC, it's talking about African Americans hit hard by coronavirus. 33% of those hospitalized are African Americans. Well, you know, 13% of the population, and 68% of coronavirus deaths in Chicago were African American. Also, like one of the first cities, little black communities that was hit hard by coronavirus is Milwaukee. But also, let's talk about the state of Louisiana. All the black people that went to Mardi Gras. But also, let's talk about the events that happened in February, too. Super Bowl, Grammys, NBA All-Star Weekend, once again, Mardi Gras, all those different things that was just going on that helped that pretty much helped with the spread of the virus. And black people were involved in a lot of these, not so much the Grammys, but Super Bowl, black people were there. It was in Miami. So Miami's a hot spot.
And let's talk about the churches, too.
Yes, yes. Black people continue to go to church, or listening to these reverends who ain't cured shit talk about curing coronavirus.
And there was a blur come across the news this morning, I think it was, that a pastor had caught coronavirus and died within a week of holding the service and encouraging people to come to the service. And we know that there have been choir rehearsals that have ended up with people spreading the coronavirus and dying. Like, people are taking this thing as if it's not serious, or if it's, and I'm saying this show, because I know a lot of people would have an issue with us saying what we're saying, but my viewpoint is, in this show, we're talking to black people, and we have to do it this way because we don't have any private channels to communicate, despite our best efforts to try to create them. Black people, you know, seem to be reluctant to want to join other black people in black spaces where we could conduct these types of discussions in private.
Well,
so look, we have to have them through black mediums in a public space where white people can have access to them. I just wanted to say that.
Right. No, but for real, and, you know, just to hammer part of that home, black people complain about Facebook and TikTok and all these places being racist, but refuse to join black platforms, so. But in talking to black people, which is, we being real black people, if you listen to this and you're not black and you don't like it, that's your fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is for black people, by black people. That's what we made this for from the beginning. If you're non-black and you're listening to this and you like it, cool, bro. We appreciate you, but don't get your panties all in the bind if we're saying something that you don't necessarily agree with or you don't think that help you. I mean, the information really ain't designed to help.
Well, it was also not only that, but it's also for the black people that are like, they shouldn't be having that conversation in public. Like, that's something we need to talk about behind closed doors. Well, point me to the fucking doors so that we can close them.
Right, right. But let's just be real, though. I mean, we are black people in America, no matter, despite what a lot of people try to say, black people in America aren't really taking this virus serious like they're supposed to. I know what I see in my city. Still mass gathering, still this, still people are still doing things that we shouldn't be doing as a community, because we already have a lot of these pre-existing conditions, as Pat alluded to earlier. So when you got pre-existing conditions going on in our community with the virus to this magnitude that breaks out, then of course black America is going to be hit hard.
Yeah.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
So black America is one of the groups, but also let's talk about the homeless population. Like I've been telling people just here in Tallahassee, the homeless here in Tallahassee really can't. They don't need to get coronavirus.
Mm-mm.
They don't need to be a coronavirus outbreak within the homeless community. That's going to be bad. Oh, that's going to be bad. And think about, like, states like California, whose homeless population is huge. They have the largest homeless population as far as states in the country. Like, so have you found any numbers yet on just the outbreak within homeless populations across the country and various populations?
I haven't found any numbers that I could really point a finger at, but what I do know that is that this is another one of those subjects where black people are, look, 40%, according to most of the numbers I've seen, and I know it's hard to really quantify how many homeless people there are, but 40% of the homeless people in America were black. We 13% of the population, 40% of the homeless. So if the black community is getting hard amongst people who have the resources to go to the doctor or to have a home, I can only imagine what it's doing to the homeless people who have nowhere to go, nowhere to seek shelter. And at this point, the shelters were basically, massive piles of human beings being allowed to sleep in one space together. Well, you can't do that with shelter
when you're homeless. Right. Ain't, you got to, ain't no rules like that. Ain't no mask. Ain't no gloves.
So I was listening to a broadcast this morning on NPR that was talking about some of the things that they're trying to do for the homeless people. But, you know, they're trying to get churches involved. They're trying to get other things involved. And in a lot of cases, they were saying a lot of the faith-based organizations are happy to get involved. But it was real interesting that they mentioned the a lot, and just the tone of the conversation was such that, you know, it made me anyways think that there probably is a pretty good percentage of organizations they're reaching out to concerning homeless people that, you know, aren't necessarily being accommodating. And, you know, the homeless people right now are being kind of lost in this whole discussion because they're already invisible, you know.
Yeah.
And so you have a situation like this roll around. Like you said, there's no social distancing rules when you fucking homeless. Look, bro, I'm fucking cold. I'm hungry. I'm tired. The easiest way I can take care of being cold is to be in proximity to other human beings.
Right.
But then all of the resources that I have available to me require me to be herded into a place with a bunch of other human beings.
And then so, comorbidity. That already there.
So, and then, you know, the pre-existing conditions, homeless people are more likely to have a pre-existing health condition. So when you just look at what's going on.
Well, let's just be real, man. We are, and it's not for a lot of these people. It's not intentional. So I do want to say that because I fall into the category as well. But we are all a bit short-sighted on how we look at fighting or helping our communities when it comes to COVID, because we really have no idea where to start.
Right.
We still don't fully understand what we're dealing with. Long-term, mid-term ramifications. Short-term ramifications, we know you either survive or you don't. Mid-term ramifications, we don't know. Long-term ramifications, we don't know. People living now have never experienced anything like this. So we really don't have anything. So we constantly are forgetting groups of people. We're constantly leaving groups of people out, not intentionally, but we are. Like Shelby and I the other day trying to come up with ideas of how we can do a food distribution of fresh fruits and produce in a community that we can't create a crowd, but always creates a crowd when you bring food out. So you want to do a drive-through? What about the people who don't have cars? Like, how do we not bring COVID into them? So those things we have to be thinking about when it comes to like homeless populations and all the different populations that we want to help, but the homeless population at the same time is being forgotten about in this COVID outbreak. Let's just be real, especially black homeless.
Yeah, and then, you know, even scarier thing to think about is 52%, according to the numbers that I've looked at, 52% of homeless people with kids are black. So now you're looking at not just homeless adults, as we like to often think about, but now you're talking about homeless children, you know, which paints a different picture of what's going on. And I think we're all guilty of moving before we really have a really thorough understanding of what we're dealing with. And I think when COVID sparked, a lot of people with a lot of great intentions started trying to figure things out. And one of the things that I'm learning and I'm getting a lot better at is to slow down. You know, and I think that's something that all of these organizations, they're doing great work. I'm not trying to take anything away from any organization that's out there doing work. But if you're in the process of starting a new plan that assists people during the midst of this pandemic, you need to slow down. All right? Slow down and really think about who you're serving and how you can best serve them, and really think about all of the different groups of people out there, especially if you're a black organization. You have to concern yourself with impoverished black people, with homeless black people, with well-to-do black people, with black people who are going through periods of violence, domestic violence, sexual violence. You got to figure out how to account for you know, black children who are homeschooled, who are not homeschooled, who are not in public school and charter school, who are in private school, who are floating in between because they're enrolled in public school, but they ain't going to public school because they ain't going no fucking where. Like, you got to really try to sit back and account for all of these different populations, and our rush to, because I'm guilty of it too, and our rush to just do stuff, we do forget about large segments of the population that need the assistance, while thinking about people who 9 times out of 10 are going to be okay without whatever it is that you particularly are putting together, because they have resources that they could get from other places. What makes the homeless population so serious for me is that these people are invisible and they don't have a lot of resources. And when we start trying to plan for things, because they're invisible, we don't even think about them. And in the midst of a pandemic like this, where you even have less people out on the road traveling, they're not even necessarily getting the same handouts they used to get.
That's true. Yeah, it's a lot of factors that go into that, especially with COVID and the homeless population. I do it, and it's sad to say, but I do expect to see a lot of disparities, a lot of deaths among the homeless population because of, you know, us continuously forgetting them. And we're conditioned to forget them.
Right. We are.
And that's a societal thing. So that's not saying nobody's better than the other, but societal things, we're conditioned to forget about them. We're conditioned to look past them or overlook them. We help people on, or like at the poverty line or a little bit below the poverty line, not necessarily severely below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So.
And you're right. And I'm somebody that's experienced homelessness before.
Me too.
And even with, right. So, I say that because even as people, like we both said, we've experienced it, we still forget about them.
But see, and I'm going to be real with you. We were in our homelessness because my mother was, we had a situation where we were homeless. Yeah, so we had a single mother, homeless with 2 kids. We would be looked at before any other of the homeless populations. You could have somebody been out there 15 years. They're not going to look at that person before they looked at my mom, because she was a homeless woman, homeless single mother with 2 kids. So they're going to look at us first.
And see, I was homeless from another regard. I was homeless. Well, I was homeless in 2 instances. The first instance was I ran away from home as a teenager, and I stayed gone for an extended period of time. I was still going to school and whatnot, but, you know, when it came time to leave school and lay my head somewhere, you know, I would ride my bike around town until I crashed out at a park or on a bench or you know, somewhere. So, you know, I was doing that for an extended period of time, definitely long enough to get a good gist of what it must be like to be homeless. I'm not saying I was like that for a couple of months or whatever. It was like a week or so that I was in that situation. But then I was in this situation the second time for a longer period of time, which is a whole other story that I might share later. But even in all of that, that's why when you say we're conditioned to forget about them as a society, even though I've been homeless at 2 periods of time in my life, I still forget about the homeless population from time to time.
Right.
So in that, we do have to be real with ourselves and understand that even though, like, Joe and I are saying what could be viewed as an attack on people for making plans to forget about the homeless, it's not that.
It's not an attack. It's how we condition.
Right. We gotta always be pushing back against that.
We do. We can't attack nobody for doing the same thing we do. But you do have to go back to clarify things, because I'm even learning from my own social giants platform. People make up stuff and just run with it. You ain't even.
That's
say
exactly
that.
Why I'm clarifying, because I know we ain't attacking nobody, but I know somebody will hear this and be like, well, what the fuck they doing criticizing and attacking people for forgetting them? No, we not criticizing and attacking nobody. But the fact of the matter is, homeless people are being forgotten.
Right.
And we both just admitted that we've been engaged in planning sessions that have not considered the homeless people.
Right. So let's take another look at this the effects of coronavirus and look at its effect on people who experience domestic and sexual violence. That first week when they start talking about coronavirus and doing stay at home orders and things, some of the information I saw was domestic violence rates are going to go up, sexual mm-hmm. violence rates are going to go up because mm-hmm. people who could normally get out of the house and escape their attackers for a certain amount of time or even whatever, they it's hard to escape that person or those people when you ordered to stay inside the house. And I'm going to be honest. I don't even know where to start to help, to be honest. Like, what ideas do you have for this, Pat? I have no idea where to start to help.
I think it's kind of late right now. This is one of those things where, and I'm going to start here because there are a lot of people that get paid a lot of money to think about contingency plans for pandemics and things like this. So, again, I'm going to strike at that narrative that this was unpredictable. This is bullshit. There are people at the highest levels of government and the lowest levels of government who are paid to think of shit like this. This is not an unthinkable or unforeseen situation. Matter of fact, we know that they have had pandemic drills and pandemic meetings and planning sessions even last year and the year before that. So every year they're having global pandemic discussion sessions about how they're going to behave during a pandemic and what would be the best way to operate. So for all of these people saying that there was no way we could have foreseen a pandemic, bullshit. Bullshit.
That's why they had a pandemic task force.
Right. Right. Now, I'm not going to get into the politics and all of that of what ended up happening and why this thing is out of control. But definitely want to push back hard on that narrative that this was an unforeseen occurrence. That is bullshit. Pandemics are a part of life, period. Every fucking species of life, even plants, deal with epidemics and pandemics. Shit gets sick and it spreads. All right? So, that being said, I think personally one of the things that needed to be done was there needed to be we need more safe spaces. And I know it's easy to say that with regards to racially safe spaces and all of these other places, but we need more places that are better funded and resourced where you can get a bunch of people who are in dangerous situations at home, put them in those spaces, and allow them to have space to themselves. Now, I have heard in various cities across the country where they are the city or the state is working with hotels in order to put domestic violence victims in those places. And I think that's a great idea. I don't think it's sustainable, but I do think it's a great idea.
But it's something. It's something.
Right.
It's better than what I got.
Right. I'm not knocking it at all. It's just, with the cost of a hotel room stay, it's not sustainable. But it's better than leaving them at home. But I think we need, in one of those instances where I feel like you need somebody that's well-resourced, either a nonprofit that's getting its funding from a government agency that's well-funded, are from donors that are extremely sensitive and very passionate. But you need some organization that's able to establish hotel-like structures for this purpose. And that needs to be in place anyways, in my opinion. Because even when it's not a pandemic, you still want to have a place where people can go and get out of compromised situations at home. So I just think if we were doing what we needed to do in terms of resources and funding for these people before the pandemic started, then we would be able to continue to do that now. Because, in my opinion, there really should be no difference. Like, even if there isn't a pandemic going on, you still should want to give a victim of domestic violence a place where they can go and be in their own space.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't even see where, if things were in place the way I feel like they should have been, I don't even see where anything different would need to occur. Obviously, transportation would be a bit of an issue.
Well, going back to the dismantling of the pandemic task force, also slow moving, look, if we knew, if me and you knew about this shit in January, the government knew about this shit before January.
Oh, yeah.
Or before we did. So they understood what was happening, understood what the outcome could be, and moved slow. So we got to blame the American government and
absolutely,
you know, healthcare filling all those for moving slow. Like I said, if we knew, they got down there. Like, because it ain't like we did no goddamn ninja fire searching.
No, we ain't like do that. No deep investigative reporting or none of that shit.
To regular old research. And we found out about that in late January. And, hell, we was ahead of the curve on a lot of people, because a lot of people didn't know nothing about coronavirus until the outbreak had happened. And so, but I've worked in domestic violence prevention for the last 10 years, and this is a strange
topic for you. I don't know why you threw it at me.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion first.
Oh.
And try to get some numbers and stuff. But
oh, so you was using me to give you time.
Nah, man, you got an opinion. Damn it. But now, so the way domestic violence and the outreach and stuff been going to quell domestic and sexual violence, from what the outreach that I've experienced, it will do little to none effect on what's going on right now with the state of things in the COVID-19 outbreak, because it was outreach being done, but not mass outreach like that should be done. So if you got one or two organizations out there doing outreach, but then it's the difference between going to a community center and doing outreach to having to go into different communities and going to people's houses and finding different dealing with people on one-on-one basis and all these different things. It makes things a lot more challenging doing outreach and giving resources. The centers are still available. The resources are still available. But the challenge is, you're not at this place that I'm used to going to, because I can't go to this place because this place may not be open because of the COVID-19. So now we have to catch you in your communities. So is that type of outreach being done? Like at my job right now, we know we do HIV/AIDS, but I tie in the sexual and domestic violence with that. We're not doing any outreach right now. No, we're not doing any testing right now. We're not doing none of that right now because, hell, we don't know what the hell is happening next. We just don't know. So that's one of my fears, is a lot of people are suffering because a lot of the outreach workers may not know where to start. Now, I operate a bit different. I'm from the hood. I'm from a lot of these places. I'm a guy. I think a lot different. I think I can whoop half the population's ass. I probably can't, but I just think that. But it's just my bravado as a guy makes me go about things a bit different. But a lot of the workers who do sexual domestic violence prevention aren't men, aren't a black man from the hood like I am. So it's a big issue right now. A lot of things aren't being done because people don't know where to start and how to help and how to find people. Like I say, if you got a lady who would come to this specific center once a week, and now she ain't coming to the center because the center ain't open, how can I contact her? How can I get to her? You know, that's the dilemma with this when it comes to domestic and sexual violence with this. That's one of the first things I thought about when people started talking about, the coronavirus is our impact on sexual and domestic violence victims. It's going to get worse for a lot of these people. And a lot of the resources, even though they're there, it's going to feel like they're dried up because a lot of people's hands are tied and what they can do and what they can't do.
So. Yeah, I do think outreach is going to be impacted. I agree with that. I ain't got no choice but to agree. You're the expert. But it is one of those things where, you know, and that's a lot different from, I think you asked me what do I think we should do about it. But that's a whole different angle in terms of how do we reach these people and how do we not only get to them in their space since we have to because they can't come to our space, but how do we make them comfortable enough in their space, in a foreign space, to share with us what they would have shared had they been allowed to come to our space?
Right.
And taking the steps to move forward from there, because I was listening to some other domestic violence outreach workers who were saying that they've had to change a lot of the questions they ask to being strictly yes or no only questions, because they're on the phone with the person and they have to behave as if the abuser is in the same room.
There. Right. You got, and you have to have that specific conversation. You don't know if somebody's listening. And that depends on the relationship that you built with the person, the rapport, how do you all communicate. So, like, do we even have code words set up yet? Like, if I'm just starting to work out, if I'm just starting to work with you, or hell, I'm just starting to try to find you to build rapport, I have no idea how to communicate with you. I mean, I don't even know if my presence is putting you in danger or this calling. It could be put. All of that is a factor because, shit, we can't really investigate it like we would normally do because I can't get you in this space alone because of the risk of COVID.
And that's something that I do think. Now, I will say the government and nonprofits with a lot of resources, I don't cut them no slack. They should have anticipated this and moved accordingly. But smaller nonprofits, smaller outreach centers, new outreach centers that are just starting up, a lot of those people, I do cut them a lot of slack because they don't necessarily have the funds or the resources to have somebody sitting back thinking of contingency plans for shit that might not occur but once or twice in a generation. And a lot of domestic violence centers, from my understanding, fall in that area where they just don't have the resources to have somebody on staff that just thinks up contingency plans for crazy shit. I mean, they're barely getting funded as it is, especially with this government now, not really funding any social programs whatsoever, or trying to defund them anyways. So,
yeah,
it does present a very difficult problem, the same difficult problem that it presents to children who are in domestic violence situations or in situations where they're being sexually assaulted or just beaten and abused for even without a sexual nature to it. You know, how do you get access to that child? Whereas before you might have had access to that child at school. Schools are closed. So now you have to weigh the pros and cons of, do I go and knock on this person's door and tell their mother or father or the individual that's potentially abusing the child who I am? Or do I beat them over the head and take the kid? Or, you know, like, I know that's not an option. But it does present, yeah, and you did say it. When you said it, I was thinking more along the lines of dealing with adults. I wasn't even thinking about children, but you're exactly right. You did. The exact same scenario you described still works out for children. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, what's going to be interesting, too, is will there be a contingency plan moving forward? Because my viewpoint on the way outreach should work is that you should build your outreach program in such a way that something like this wouldn't affect it unless like you were mandated, absolutely mandated to shut down. But like even when I was in, you know, like when I've gone to visit halfway homes and stuff like that, I've always kind of disliked the feel of having a bunch of people, not halfway houses, I'm sorry, because that's not exactly it, but in group, like group homes, group settings. I've always disliked the feel of not being able to have your own personal space. So my idea behind outreach and getting people set up has always been get them out of their environment and into a safe space that's their space. So with that, with that structural framework to the way I think about it, a pandemic wouldn't have affected my operations whatsoever. It might have affected outreach. You're right on that, if I was doing outreach. But it wouldn't have affected anything once I had gotten a person into the system. And what we're having
yeah,
now
that's
is,
what I was going to say. People yeah, in the system would be good, but new people would be affected.
But from what it... from what I'm understanding about what's happening now, it's affecting everybody on both ends of the spectrum, people that are in the system and people that are outside of the system, because there isn't necessarily a place where you can put these people and still be adhering to the social distancing rules in a lot of places where they have them in group homes and stuff like that.
Right.
So I don't know if the group home dynamic changes anything, though. Like, is that still considered where you're in a group
If you're already in the group home, it doesn't change that much. If you're trying to get into the group home, it's a change. Because it could halt the process, the COVID outbreak could halt the process of that person getting in the group home for fears of COVID transmission happening in the group home, especially if somebody new. So what are the testing protocols, processes, you know, all those. Now, and I'm not saying I'm right, but those just ideas and things that could affect new people being able to get refuge.
No, well, I am saying you're right, though, because this is the conversation that I was listening to just earlier today between outreach workers and domestic violence workers and talking about some of the issues they're having. And that's what prompted me to even say, there are a lot of different angles about COVID-19 that aren't being covered, because we're just talking about the contagiousness of it, the spread, and the death. But what about all of these social programs that are being impacted, where people aren't necessarily being impacted because they have COVID-19, but they're being impacted because their support network has been shut down, or their safe space has been shut down, or, you know...
Yeah.
All of these other issues. So this thing is affecting us not just on the level of get sick and die, but also on the level, I mean, even if you want to think about it, like taxes. A lot of people are going to have extreme delays in getting their tax returns, which in this situation right now, especially with people already being laid off, that could be a really bad thing. They pushed the filing deadline back for a lot of businesses to July, which is going to help with businesses and other wealthy people that would have had to pay taxes. But what about the people that are getting taxes that haven't gotten their taxes back and now might have to wait an additional 3 or 4 months on top of, like, we both know, you know, somebody that's been laid off from their job over this. You know, I know we both know at least the same person. But I know several other people outside of that person that have lost their job over this. And they were thinking, they were like, well, my taxes will be in soon, so I should be straight. And now they're finding out that it might be 2, 3, 4 months before you get your tax return.
Yeah. Yeah. Just got to get it in right now. But, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of things that go into it. But, you know, not to keep this episode extended. This is needed conversations, but we just want to get ideas and thoughts out, updates on coronavirus, where we are. And we had a couple interviews and things last couple weeks. Never heard from us about this, but here we are. So just remember looking at the way coronavirus is affecting black people. Pay attention to that. Pay attention to where it's affecting the homeless. Pay attention to the way coronavirus is affecting domestic and sexual violence victims. Do your damn research on coronavirus. Do your research on the origins of the virus, how the virus is affecting people, who it affects, its relationship or non-relationship with 5G. Do your homework. Like, don't be the person out there that just talking and just putting stuff out there because it sounds good. Like, do your homework so you won't be out here looking crazy when the facts come out. But as a community, though, we have to start looking at we'll continue to try to push the narrative of getting us to really look at what we're doing as a community and make sure that we can do what we need to do to fix things for ourselves and make sure we're doing better. Because as of right now, Corona ain't going nowhere. So we'll have a later discussion about vaccines and all those things that go a little further than that. But, no, that's pretty much our show for the day, man. You got some closing, some parting shots you want to hit the people with, Pat?
Yeah, man. Stay smart and stay safe.
See, he been solemn with y'all this time. So that's how you know it's serious. Because what's the one you had? What, fuck a motherfucker up or something? You said, how you saying?
In your motherfucking face.
In your motherfucking face. Hey, but, man. Y'all know how it go down, though. We just making sure that we bring the truth, get people to think about things that's going on, but also follow up our talking with action in our streets and in our communities. And we do our best to continue to do that. So with that being said, man, I am Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train podcast series, and we about this bitch, man. We holler at y'all next week.